I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Several U.S. officials have expressed concerns that Israel's Iron Dome and its other air defense systems could be overwhelmed by Hezbollah's weapons in the event of a full-scale war. There's been discussion about shifting some of the defense systems from Gaza over to the north, where the Hezbollah terror group has intensified its attacks from Lebanon.
Hezbollah, over the years, again, if not decades, has amassed an enormous inventory of short and medium range rockets, some longer range rockets, some that actually have features of sort of short range ballistic missiles, and then other types of the much shorter range rockets that Hamas was able to launch against Israel on October 7th and in previous conflicts with Israel. But the scale and scope and the volume of those weapons that Hezbollah possesses is probably several orders of magnitude more than even what Hamas had before October 7th. And so if that's the scale of that type of threat from Hezbollah, that's why these questions about the Iron Dome capability are so serious now.
They are serious because they know that we can only handle so much. And that is the issue that is going to be facing Israel if Hezbollah decides to escalate. They have obviously knocked down numerous missiles and rockets aimed into them so far, but it has not been a full-scale attack by Hezbollah against Israel. And, of course, on the south side, you've got Israeli forces fighting to eradicate Hamas. There's going to be a break point, and the break point is going to happen in the sense that when Hezbollah thinks they are so preoccupied that we can slam them with everything we've got and we can get through the Iron Dome. The Iron Dome is a nomenclature they came up with to describe that we are fully protected. Well, they're not fully protected. And some of the Hezbollah rockets were hit in the northern part of Israel, chasing and killing some Israelis and chasing something like 8,000 out of their homes. You don't hear much about it. All the focus is referenced what's going on in Gaza. And what you hear about that is the Biden administration is withholding weapons, according to Netanyahu, and I think he's probably right. The State Department will tell you, and the Biden administration will say, we're giving them what they want. No, you're not. And they don't plan on doing it. Biden has to walk this tightrope between, am I going to allow Hezbollah and Hamas to begin to roll over Israel and yet at the same time hold Jewish-Israeli support in my hand, or am I going to succumb to the issue with those who want to run over Israel, the U.S., and all peace-loving countries? That really means that it's going to come down to the fact something's going to have to give. Thanks for joining us. This is hour number two of Larry Connors USA. And I'm glad to have you on board. Here we are, June 21, 2024. And before we wrap up this part of this first segment, I'll give you details about two events coming up that I really encourage you to take part in. You can join us for one, Saving America 2024, and two, for a debate watch party. I'll give you details a little bit later in this same segment. But again, reminding you, when we're on the air here Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m., you can watch the program. And how do you do that? You go to News Talk STL Rumble, Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. Or you can go to Larry Connors USA Rumble, Facebook, or Twitter. I'm beginning to think some of my Facebook fans are competing against the overall News Talk fans as to watching. I don't care which you go to, as long as you're paying attention to the program. And on News Talk Rumble, they have numerous other programs that are on the station, all very good. was just commenting to one of my colleagues here the other day that I have worked at probably not that many radio stations or broadcast operations in my career, because I never did believe it was great to talk about where I've been, how often I've been there, and so forth, but find a good solid place. And I've been blessed enough to have some good solid places. But I would tell you this, the full unanimous support inside this building for anyone and everyone is untouchable from what I've seen anywhere else. We would have little cliques in some of each of those that, you know, we were all together, but overall it wasn't. And you often had to deal with management, which was sometimes obstinate. Here, they are in step with us, leading us and beside us. That's why I'm glad to be on News Talk STL and encourage you to keep in mind we are your number one. Number one for live local conservative talk. And if you missed what I said in the last hour about how George Soros is trying to take over conservative talk in this market and across the nation, I strongly urge you to call or pull up that podcast, video or audio, and listen to those remarks. You might well be aware that there had been a push recently, and I had to remind my grandson the other day, he's turning 18, I said, you do know that you need to register for the Selective Service. The Selective Service was originally brought in, of course, to make sure those of 18 or so were going to register and be available in case of war for a draft. I'm not looking that we're going to have a draft need again, but now what you've got is you've got some saying, well, we also should have women 18 or older register for the draft. A couple of years ago, this is also raised. And Josh Hawley, Senator of Missouri, fought it back then and still does. But let's go back to how he said and why on Washington Watch, why the decision was made by the National Defense Authorization to no longer force women to register for the draft.
I think at the end of the day that the Democrats didn't want to cast a vote that would have required daughters and wives and sisters, and by the way, we're talking about teenagers, 19, 21, 20 years old, to go out and register for the draft to fight America's wars. And, you know, if that would have been the price of passing the NDAA in the Senate, I said that I'm going to force a vote on this, and we're going to put people on record, because they should have to explain why it is that they want to carry out the largest expansion of the draft in American history and focus it entirely on women. At a time, by the way, Tony, when we're also seeing historic numbers of sexual assaults in the military, and what do the Democrats want to do? They want to draft more women. They want to force women to enter right. The military against their will. And my view is that that was bad policy from the first, and that they should have to answer the American people for it. I think at the end of the day, they didn't want to do that.
Yep, they decided they didn't want to do that. We don't in this nation want to send our women to war. Israel conscripts everyone, male or female. And there are only two genders. May I need to remind you of that. But their young women are conscripted. They may or may not be at, quote, a front line. But in Israel, everywhere is a front line, actually, when you get down to it. They're surrounded by enemies. And not only at their borders, but those who come inside and terrorist bombings and things of that nature. So they want everyone prepared. I've known a couple of women who have been with the IDF, and they have told me about their training and everything they go through. I know we had numerous women in the military, our military, that trained and wanted to be part of a military force one way or the other. And I say more pride and proud of them because they are willing to serve their country in that fashion. Some of them later go into law enforcement. Some go on to something else. But the issue is, do you draft them? Do you pull them in? The problem we're having, though, now, as we have been noted by Dakota Wood, former Heritage Advisor, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel, said, if you were to draft men of age, just the men of age right now, less than 20% would qualify because of drug or crime issues, things of that nature. And of that 20%, you'd probably end up taking maybe 12% that would be fit for duty. So if you're not going to have a male force that is going to be dominant and take care of things and make it happen, well, then you're going to have a backup, and that would be women. And we have more and more men leaving the military as they retire or walk away from it to do something else. So, no, I don't think we want to get into that. But we have a war inside our nation that involves women as victims on a constant basis, and that's the illegals coming across. There are recent stories just this week that show how bad it's gotten. First, let's go to one story based out of New York.
To New York now, a migrant man accused of raping a New York City teen is waking up in a jail cell this morning. A judge denying Christian Inga bail, declaring him a flight risk. He's now looking at a possible life sentence. News Nation's Alicia Nieves is in New York City this morning. Alicia, tell me more. What do we know about this man?
We've learned quite a bit in the last 24 hours or so. We know that 25-year-old Christian Inga came to the U.S. in 2021, crossing our southern border in Texas illegally. He had a 3-year-old in tow. We're told that he was arrested when he got to Texas, but was allowed to kind of stay here in the country pending a hearing. However, again, in the last 12 hours or so, we've also learned from law enforcement here in New York that Christian Inga Landi was actually ordered to go back to Ecuador just a year later in 2022. When you pair kind of that with what prosecutors say he did, some admissions of guilt that he offered to police when he was arrested, saying that he may have done this crime because he had a drug addiction, it's a bit of a hard pill to swallow. You start to realize what some are realizing and concerned about, that had he been deported, we may not have this case that has really struck a chord with people here in New York City, but even people around the country.
And it should. And my question still is, the 3-year-old that he brought into the country, when he was allowed to cross our border, he came across with a 3-year-old. Where is that child? What happened to her? I'm not asking for her name. I just want to know what happened to her. He was allowed to enter the country with that 3-year-old. I don't hear any report saying she was later seen with him. Now, that, again, is one example. There's been a more recent example in the more recent area, and that would involve Missouri.
5 men in the U.S. illegally were arrested Monday morning in northeast Missouri after a teenage girl was reported missing in Indiana. The suspects are accused of kidnapping the 14-year-old from her home. They were tracked down in Macon County. All 5 of these men are charged with second-degree kidnapping and first-degree endangering the welfare of a child. The girl's father had last seen her getting in a black SUV and reported her missing to police in Indiana. Just before 2 a.m. on Monday, Missouri state troopers were notified that the girl's cell phone was pinged going westbound on U.S. Highway 36. A short time later, a Shelbina police sergeant saw a black SUV with Texas plates heading west. Just before 2:30 a.m., a trooper saw an SUV matching the description and pulled it over in Macon County. The trooper looked in the vehicle and saw a juvenile in the back. She identified herself as the missing teen. With help from the Macon County Sheriff's Office and Macon Police Department, the trooper took these men into custody. 3 are from Honduras and 2 are from Mexico. Authorities believe the suspects were taking the girl to California, where she was to meet with an unknown man she met on the internet.
And you don't even want to begin to believe or suspect what was going to happen to that child at that point. But unfortunately, it's true. In Wisconsin, Trump was campaigning and pointing out, look, if you want to continue down this road, if this is what you want for our nation and a threat to our children, then you go ahead and pull the lever for Biden. But he says, I will be an American president.
Joe Biden wants to be the president for illegal aliens, but I will be the president for law-abiding Americans, every background, every walk of life, every race, religion, color, and creed. I'll be the president. Fight for American workers, not for human traffickers. I will fight for the American dreamers, not the child smugglers and woman smugglers. And I will restore the sovereign borders of the United States of America. So help me God.
And hopefully that comes to pass. And of course, illegal immigration also not only is hurting us as a nation and threats to our children and the death it brings with fentanyl and the child smuggling, but what it's doing to our economy. And yet Joe Biden in the White House and his lackeys like Janet Yellen keep just plodding along, claiming everything is okay. Well, Neil Fox, or rather Neil Cavuto on Fox, pinned down Janet Yellen with one question.
But he keeps saying it was 9% when he took office. You're the top money person in the White House, and you know that was not the case. Have you ever tried to pull him aside and say, Mr. President, just so you know, inflation was not that high when you took office?
Well, look, the pandemic had hit the economy, hit America and the world with full force at the time that President Biden assumed office. And
which is why it was so low, right? Which is why it was so low when he took office. So I know the factors behind that and what was going on, and you're quite right to point that out, but he doesn't. He doesn't say that.
Well, inflation hit 9% at its peak.
16 months after he took office.
That was due to inflation was lower before the pandemic. That's absolutely true.
She never answered the question. Have you ever pinned down President Biden said, you know, you're spouting lies and fiction or maybe just misinformation? She never answered that question, did she? They want to go off into their spin zone. Well, you know, the situation was, and I remember I had a flat tire one day. I mean, they would go in any direction rather than answering the question. And the question was very simple. Have you ever asked and tried to pin down the president and say, you know, you're stating incorrect information? She didn't answer that. And Cavuto, maybe for time, I wasn't there. I don't know the situation. But he let her off the hook a little bit. He still pressed a little bit, but answer the first question. Have you ever pulled him aside and said, everything you said about inflation, when you say and speak about inflation, you're wrong? It's very possible they have in some cases told him, but then he ignores them anyway or doesn't know what to say. I don't know. I'm not even pretending to speak on behalf of Joe Biden. I don't want to go into that dark corner. All right, I told you we have a couple events coming up I really want you to consider taking part of. One is we are going to be having a debate party on June 27th. That's next week. We'll be carrying the debate live on the program as soon as my program concludes at 8 o'clock. We'll switch you to CNN and for the debate coverage. You can join us for the watch party at Johnny's Hideout. I encourage you to be there. Johnny's Hideout in High Ridge, June 27th. It's going to be a fun time with this debate. And our debate watch party will start probably a little earlier than that, so come on in when you're ready. The other event involves something coming up before that, next Tuesday, June 25th. Saving America 2024, the economy and the courts. Co-sponsored by Newstalk STL and the Heritage Foundation. Heritage experts Joel Griffith will be here on the economy and on the courts, Zach Smith. That's June 25th. You can get the tickets for free at NewstalkSTL.com, NewstalkSTL.com, St. Charles Funny Bone. And speaking of Zach Smith, he's coming up as our guest. Kwinky Dinky, lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Question, do you know what vermiculite is? It is an insulation in the attics of hundreds of thousands of homes and public buildings. Looks like kitty litter, but often contains asbestos. Wellington Environmental is the largest company in the Midwest that can remove that hazard for you. Wellington has what is called the General, a powerful industrial vacuum that can suck vermiculite out of the attic. Hang on, there's something else you should know. Many of you might qualify for up to a $4,000 rebate. You should at least contact Wellington to see if you qualify. And here's something else. Wellington arrives at the time they give you, not sometime within 4 hours. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
No, you guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local angle.
Come on, people. This is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local? Really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9/94.1 and NewsTalkSTL.com.
I have a personal story about why I trust McGuire Moving and Storage. A relative needed to escape an unhealthy relationship. Josh, Christine, and the McGuire team were understanding, even comforting. That's why I'm honored to endorse McGuire. Since 1935, McGuire's been moving and caring for families. So, moving a home, office, local, or long distance, McGuireMoving.com. McGuireMoving.com.
My name is Todd Showalter, and I'm announcing the Right Mind Show is officially running Saturday nights at 5. I'll now open the floor for questions.
Is the Right Mind Show funny at all?
No comment. Next question. Yeah, you, different reporter with the same voice.
Your co-host is very cute.
Not a question. I've got time for one more.
Do you do any impressions on the Right Mind Show?
Yeah, absolutely. Here's Joe Biden getting out of bed.
The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter, Saturday afternoons at 5 on News Talk STL.
Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta, now open in the district of Chesterfield Valley. Napoli has the only coal-fired pizza oven. That means an incredible taste you cannot get anywhere else. So enjoy a unique pizza at Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in the district. And then walk a few doors down and enjoy premium cigars and drinks at Lit Cigar Lounge. There's a perfect way to end the evening. Napoli Pizza followed by Lit Cigar Lounge. A winning combination.
This is News Talk STL.
Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light. Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light.
Roxanne. This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. As I was telling you, closing out the last segment, my next guest is going to be one of two here from the Heritage Foundation, June 25th, St. Charles Funnybone on the streets of St. Charles. The doors will open at 6:30, Saving America 2024, looking at the economy and the courts. And one of those appearing, speaking on behalf of the legal issues, Zach Smith. Zach, glad to have you back on board.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, looking at what's happening with our legal system right now, if you were standing off to the side and judging if we're doing a good job with our legal system or we're failing miserably, I'd be interested in your response.
We certainly don't get an A plus and a gold star. I'll put it that way, Larry. Obviously, with what's happened in New York and Manhattan with Alvin Bragg, with the prosecutions against Donald Trump being brought in Fulton County, and then the two federal prosecutions by Jack Smith as well, obviously those are very troubling developments and appear to be a use of lawfare that really our country hasn't seen for decades, if ever before. And so that's certainly a very troubling development. With that being said, many on the left are seeking to undermine the legitimacy of the Supreme Court because it no longer reliably delivers left-wing policy goals. Instead, today we have a majority of justices who are committed to upholding the Constitution and the laws as they're written. But yet, if you listen to Sheldon Whitehouse and some other left-leaning senators, they try to paint the Supreme Court as somehow being a rogue institution or something like that, which just is not true.
Yeah, and then when I hear them on the left proclaiming that no one is above the law and then turn around and claim that the Justice Department is persecuting Hunter Biden because daddy is running for president, I'm thinking, are we supposed to really buy that?
Well, Larry, apparently many on the left think that we're pretty stupid, which is unfortunate because if you look at Hunter Biden's case, it was about as straightforward of a gun case as any prosecutor is ever going to see. But I think what's actually important to realize is the only reason this gun case even went to trial, the only reason he's facing tax charges in September in a California federal court is because a federal judge in Delaware rejected the sweetheart plea deal that the Biden Justice Department originally tried to cut to Hunter just to get these charges to go away. And even though Hunter has been found guilty of these very serious gun charges, even though he's facing very serious tax charges in California, keep in mind, too, the most serious charges, the most potentially politically damaging charges for Joe Biden and other affiliated family members and politicians, those can't be brought any longer because the special counsel essentially dragged his feet and let the statute of limitations expire.
And they knew that. They knew that was going to happen. They had already planned that it would just kind of let it disappear. Well, today the Supreme Court is beginning to hand down, obviously, rulings on cases it heard earlier. One of them involves federal law that bans guns for those subject to domestic violence restraining orders. Some consider it the first major test of the Second Amendment, the High Court this term. 8-1 opinion, authored by Chief Justice Roberts, the court majority saying, we conclude that an individual found by court to possess a credible threat may be temporarily disarmed. The only dissenter was Clarence Thomas, and I would have to say I'm going to disagree with Justice Thomas on this. I'll take your response.
Yeah, I'm still working my way through the decision. Obviously, a lot of very lengthy, very important decisions came down today. But as you mentioned, Larry, this is the first major Second Amendment case after the very important Bruin case several terms ago, where Justice Thomas, writing for that court, basically said that in order for restrictions on firearms or firearm ownership to be constitutional, they have to be consistent with the text, structure, and history of the Second Amendment.
National historical tradition of firearm regulation, basically.
Correct. That's correct. What was in place at the time the Second Amendment was adopted? And what was interesting about today's decision, Rahimi is the name of the case, is that you saw several of the conservative justices, Justice Thomas, Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Barrett, and Chief Justice Roberts, having kind of a dialogue among themselves about how to determine what that historical record is. What does that text, structure, and history tradition look like? And so I think even though this was a very important Second Amendment case, more broadly, I think this case gave a lot of insight into the way these different justices are going to approach that text, structure, and history test going forward in a host of number of different issue areas.
Well, in fact, to that extent, six of the justices did file separate concurrences, agreeing with the outcome, but offering separate thoughts, some signaling concerns with Roberts' reasoning laid out in the majority opinion. But again, Clarence Thomas wrote, and I'm quoting from him, "The question before us is not whether Rahimi and others like him can be disarmed consistent with the Second Amendment. Instead, the question is whether the government can strip the Second Amendment right of anyone subject to a protective order, even if he's never been accused or convicted of a crime. It cannot." Now, help me understand something. I thought he had been convicted of domestic violence. Is that incorrect?
That is incorrect, Larry. Particularly at this issue, what happened is essentially he was accused of committing domestic violence against his girlfriend. And so what she did, she went to a Texas state court and got an injunction, a protective order against him, basically seeking to restrain him from, you know, having contact with her, doing those sorts of things. And because he was subjected to that state court injunction, that state court protective order, when he was later picked up possessing a firearm, that's a violation of federal law. And that's the issue that the justices were dealing with, was with that state court injunction, which is not a finding of criminal guilt beyond reasonable doubt.
But he violated the law.
Subject to a lower standard, is that sufficient to be able to disarm him consistent?
You're listening to Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation. Well, you're giving me a different perspective. I did not have all the details on it. So maybe I will withdraw that I stand against Justice Thomas, because I want it to be very clear that they are a threat. That's my concern about red flag laws. I mean, if someone just gets upset because I'm not mowing my lawn to the height that they like, and they know I have guns, they call the police, say, I consider him a threat because I told him to mow his lawn lower, and he says, I'd mow it the way I want to, and they sick police on me, and they come take my guns. I can go through a court and eventually get them back, but there go my Second Amendment rights at that point.
Right. I think you're very right to be concerned about that. And so this is a very interesting discussion. And I think everyone recognizes that if someone truly does pose a threat to themselves or others, there may be some ability for the government to intervene, deal with that immediate threat. but then, of course, make sure that your constitutional rights are protected in the meantime. And I think figuring out what that looks like and what the Constitution has to say about that is what a lot of the justices are trying to figure out.
Well, very quickly then, there is no way, based on this court ruling, and nor should it be anyway, that Hunter Biden is allowed to have a gun again.
Yeah, I think this ruling. Yeah,
well, I need to probably correct that and say if he's convicted of felony filling out that form, which he has been.
he was convicted of it. Yeah. He absolutely was.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting, Larry, I think obviously Hunter, and irony of ironies, was trying to tee up an appellate challenge to many of these gun laws that are in place. And I think this decision may make that path forward for Hunter much, much more difficult.
Well, Daddy the other day was saying, look, if you elect Trump again, he's got a chance to replace two justices that are in their 70s, and he will have a Trump court for the 40 more years beyond. And he's using that as a threat. That's why you need to elect me. Not that I want him to have the authority no more than I did Hillary. But he's looking at a couple of the justices that are into their 70s, and they're conservatives, so get them off, but put fresh conservatives on board.
Well, should we be so fortunate that we would have two more rock-solid conservative justices as Justice Clarence Thomas and Justice Samuel Alito? For my money, they've been two of the best justices on the court, not only over the past several decades, but really in the history of the court because of their commitment to faithfully applying the law despite the massive political pressure they're facing from outside sources to essentially intimidate them, intimidate their family members in order to get them not to be as constitutionally conservative as they are. And fortunately, so far, neither one of them have shown any signs of buckling or changing course.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you here in person June 25th, St. Charles Funny Bone. Tickets still available, folks. Newstalkstl.com. Quick summation answer on one for another minute here. And that would be, how is Ketanji Brown Jackson ever going to handle any case that involves a description of a woman or a female?
It's a great question, Larry. I don't know. I suppose maybe we'll get references to birthing persons or something absurd like that. But look, it's a very sad state of affairs that we even have to joke about these types of issues. But it'll be interesting to see what the court does. Next week is going to be a blockbuster week for the court. You have the Trump immunity case. You have a very important case involving homelessness issues, some very important First Amendment cases involving tech companies, including one out of Missouri, Murphy versus Missouri. Did the Biden administration pressure social media companies to remove information they didn't like? So buckle up, because next week the decisions are going to come fast and furiously.
And you're going to be right here on stage with us next Tuesday, so we look forward to it. Thank you, Zach.
Of course. Looking forward to it as well, Larry. Take care. Yes, sir.
Zach Smith with the Heritage Foundation, one of two guests for Saving America 2024. Tuesday, St. Charles Funny Bone. Doors open at 6:30. Free tickets available. NewstalkSTL.com. Coming up, the role that Hispanics are going to play in this election, and it's not going to be good for the Democrats. And more on the COVID lies. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
John Beale knows that new roofing companies can look big and trustworthy on the internet, but the fact is 96% of new roofing companies go out of business within the first 5 years. John Beale has a reputation for excellence, reliability, plus lowest cost, best roof, best guarantee. Those here today, gone tomorrow roofers, they can't match John Beale. For home or business, trust my friend John. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Have you seen the 2024 Toyota RAV4? Boy, that's an outstanding vehicle. And Ackerman Toyota has one just for you at the best price. Ackerman is the number one volume Toyota dealer in the area. Want a Camry? Maybe you want something bigger. A Toyota crossover. All the performance of an SUV, but a more compact size. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota for life.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
If you like premium cigars and spirits, take my advice. Check out Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield. The Lit Cigar owners just got back from a major convention in Vegas, and now every day, Lit is getting shipments of special cigars that will certainly amaze you. Check the Lit Cigar Facebook, staying on top of special events. Also, Lit can host a private event for you, your friends, your business. LitSTL.com. LitSTL.com. Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield.
This is News Talk STL.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So we're talking about how Latinos could decide, not just affect, but decide the 2024 election. This is a piece from The Federalist written by Austin Alonzo. Listen to these numbers. He said, nationally, 33% of Latinos support one of either Biden or Trump. 16% are undecided. And 13% of all those say that they will vote for JFK or FK Jr. So independents, Republicans, and Democrats all agree on one thing. They want the Latino vote. And he's talking to Jaime Flores, an Hispanic outreach director for the Republican National Committee. He told the Epoch Times that the Latino vote is more important in 2024 than ever before. He points this out. Hispanic or Latino Americans currently make up, and this is a staggering figure if you stop and think about it, and this is a documented figure, make up 19.1% of the nation's population, according to the latest census. So Latinos now outnumber Black Americans as the largest minority group in the U.S. So the director of the One Action Fund that formerly endorsed Joe Biden in May said the Latino vote is going to determine who's in the White House and what parties control the Congress. In the past, they both admit, left and right, that Latinos were overlooked, but right now everyone is hustling. How do we get the Latino votes? Now, this is exactly what I'd forecast 2+ years ago as the illegals began to come into the country. Biden's going to have so many inside the country, they will not be eligible to vote, but they will have a chance if someone assists them to cast an illegal ballot. But in the end, when they are citizens, by one fashion or another, they will be voting, and the Black vote will be not that big of a concern for Democrats. I hate to put it that way, but that's what's coming. So there's a Pew Research Center report that a couple months ago pointing out the Latinos make up 13% of eligible voters in the 2024 election. That's up from 4% in 1996. It doesn't sound like a big increase, except, again, 4% to 13%. And according to Pew, the same research, 61% of those Latinos are either Democrats or they lean toward the Democrat Party. And by comparison, 83% of Black voters, 11% of eligible voters in 2024 are Democrats or lean Democrats. But looking at the 2021 assessment of recent elections, Pew determined that former President Trump won 38% of the Latino vote in 2020. 38%. In 2016, running against Hillary, he won 28%. And now you got a survey that came out just last month from the Time Siena survey group. The Latinos are split on the 2024 campaign. 33% support either major party candidate, 16% undecided, 13% said they'll vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. That 13% for him is very big. So is the 16% undecided. And I got to say again, I don't know how anyone can not be decided at this point. Do you have to wait to the day of election to decide, okay, I'm going with this one? Really? Tells me you haven't been watching and living through America in the last few years. It just suddenly got dropped down from the sky and you're told, here's your chance to vote. They also point out in Arizona, that's a longtime Republican stronghold, Democrats did win statewide victories in 20 and 22. If they're legal voting, may I add that? But again, the National Communications Director for a progressive organization said the role of the Latino vote was paramount in those victories. In Nevada, the Times poll found Latinos prefer former President Trump over Biden by a 10% margin. In Arizona, the opposite is true. And again, in both states, Kennedy has more than 13% support. Those are fascinating. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you, but the bottom line is 13% of the Latino voters apparently don't know who they want to support at this point. And 13 to 16% are willing to say they're with RFK. And then the rest tend to swap back between Trump and Biden. 33% remaining. 2024, here's where Democrats, I think, are making a big issue that might blow up in their face. They're focusing on abortion access. They think that will motivate their voters. Republicans are centering on the focus with immigration issues and everything that comes with it. The drain on jobs, public resources, crimes that affect the Latino community before it's outside their community. And I don't think the Democrats' push for abortion is going to work for the Latinos, not if they're good, strong Catholics. Religious Latinos are most often Catholic. So for them, abortion and religious culture plays a role in how they're going to view that issue. I want to give you something else in this part of this segment. A lot of kids at this point have either applied or are waiting for reward back if they're going to be admitted to a university. And others are preparing to do it for next year. Trade jobs are still valuable. In fact, an average salary for a trade job in America is $61,900, but many start out, even in the beginning, paying a lot more. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the highest paying trade jobs in 2024, ultrasonographer. I guess that's the one who does the ultrasound for someone to see their baby. They're trained how to do it and everything. $130,000. A respiratory therapist, I guess helping people with breathing issues, $100,000. Dental hygienist, just under that $100,000. A construction manager, $88,000. An aircraft mechanic, I thought this would have been more, but it's $82,000, $83,000. A licensed practice nurse, just under $60,000. And then if you look at the highest paying construction-related trades, elevator and escalator installer, $100,000 plus. Electrical power line installer, $85,000. An iron worker, 68,000. And again, I thought that would have been more. But the bottom line is we need people with skills. They may not, one, be suitable for college, university, because they have no interest in being inside a classroom all day, and they're not good at studying, and they're not that sharp when it comes to that kind of thing, but they certainly know how to build a house from the ground up, something I do not know, or fixing plumbing or electrical work. And you know my motto, if I've got a problem at the house, I mean, if it involves something like fixing anything, my motto is, and I live by it, that sounds like a project, and I don't do projects. So somebody's going to get some money. I'm going to be calling for somebody to come fix it. So I help the skilled income as well. I want to take a moment in closing up this program for this week. I want to review some of the testimony and comments from this week's Senate committee that was pushing for more answers on COVID. Let's begin with, who do you trust?
Who do I believe? And who you believe does go to character. And so we have to look at some of the statements. Like I say, I've never seen anything like this between public and private statements. So Christian Anderson, early on in this, sends an email to Fauci. And his Fauci says, Bob Gary and a couple of the other virologists, we think it's inconsistent. This virus, this genetic sequence of COVID, is inconsistent with the expectations of evolutionary theory. So they believed it didn't come from nature. They had looked at this. These are smart people that when they were not looking at it, when they were trying to look at it through an objective lens, concluded one thing until they came to another conclusion that it might hurt the business of science and the arrangements they had going on with China and concluded opposite.
In other words, they were saying one thing, but they conclude the opposite. That's Senator Rand Paul, as you well know, from Kentucky. In fact, he was grilling several of those testifying this time around on the COVID-19 origins. He said, you basically had U.S. medical experts suppressing the lab leak theory, and that is true, judging by their responses and the questions throughout it. He was questioning at one time Dr. Robert Gary, a professor at the Tulane School of Medicine, during the appearance before the Senate Homeland Security Committee, which was carrying this out. Senator Rand Paul criticized Dr. Gary for a lack of, quote, open-mindedness when it comes to the origins of COVID-19. And in fact, he said, and I'm quoting him, so just in the last few minutes, Dr. Gary has told us that this couldn't have come from bats. It had to go through an intermediate host. That may well be true, but arguing against that is that they tested some 90,000 odd animals, and there's no animal host that has been found. 90,000. But what he doesn't tell you is that the animal host could be a lab animal. It could be passed through a lab animal related to it. And that's one way of quickly adapting and pushing natural selection to adapt a virus towards humans. He also wrote about the fact that Dr. Chan had written extensively about this. This virus did not show up clunky and poorly transmissible. It showed up immediately, extremely transmittable in humans, as if it had been pre-adapted in the lab, which we all suspect. And then, of course, he targeted Dr. Fake. He said, I know of no other example in modern scientific history or publications where a publication has come forward pronouncing with such authority that the lab leak is implausible. It's implausible, and it's not a laboratory construct, while primarily saying this is no friggin' conspiracy theory. Well, it looks like it was. One of the others testifying was Dr. Stephen Quay.
What happens if we have these hearings and nothing happens? The Wuhan Institute of Virology right now is testing a Nipah virus in a synthetic clone. This is a U.S. CDC bioterrorism agent. It kills 3 out of 4 people. A lab leak with an airborne Nipah virus would quickly, within weeks, disrupt food and energy distribution, fire and police services, medical care. My analysis of this tipping point event is that it would set back civilization about 250 years.
In other words, if you had one of these viruses that they were working on the lab actually get out, killing 3 out of every 4 and setting civilization, all of civilization, back 250 years, have dead people all around us. It would look like something from an apocalyptic world with zombies. This Senate hearing was obviously focusing on the foremost theories and arguments about why they did or didn't believe them. I told you about Dr. Geary and what he was saying. The one you were listening then to, a GOP expert witness, Dr. Quay, former faculty member at Stanford University School of Medicine, flat out admitting, look, there is a tipping point here. If we continue to allow this to go and we don't realize what we're dealing with and how we're going to deal with it, you could have a disease that would kill 3 out of 4 and set us back 250 years. Did you lose someone during COVID? A friend, a relative? I feel for you. And it may have been that there would have been nothing that would have could have been done differently to save them. And maybe there was. But many felt they were under such scrutiny and authorization and control of the government that you couldn't do anything except what they told you, and options were not available. And even what they were telling you was not working. You had Dr. I'm going to give her the title Dr. in a facetious way, but I don't want anyone to take it that way. Rachel Maddow on MSNBC saying, you get the shot, the virus, you get it, it will not jump from you to anyone else. Or you are around someone who's had a shot, they've had COVID, they cannot give it to you because you've had the shot. It all proved to be a lie. They ended up admitting it. And back again to Rand Paul commenting. He said, we went back and forth. We know it went back and forth to Dr. Fauci and editors who wanted to make statements stronger. He said, it all ended up finally being admitted in one email. This is about the science of business with China. Tells you everything. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.